Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. If your home or business has pests, don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. Trump is now demanding that his mobs be able to block the entrances to all courthouses. All courthouses, including the one he is in. His thugs should be, quoting his online post, allowed to protest at the front steps of courthouses all over the country, rather than be, quote, rudely and systematically shut down and ushered off to faraway holding areas, essentially denying them their constitutional rights. He tells them, rally behind MAGA, save our country. The only thing you have to fear is fear itself. When that stochastic call to lay siege to federal buildings did not work, why does this sound so familiar? Trump again did what he thinks is smooth and subtle. Quote, the Palestinian protests at Columbia University have closed the college down, but the area surrounding the courthouse in downtown Manhattan is closed up like a drum, with New York City's finest, parentheses, police, all over the place. Why not send some to Columbia? Republicans want the right to protest in front of the courthouse like everyone else. Again, this seems oddly January 6th-ish familiar. Reduce law enforcement around an area Trump wants to see sacked by his gangs and his militias and his morons ready to spring him or to hang a vice president or, who knows, kill a judge. He only forgot to note, we'll be wild. To turn the temperature down a little bit on this, to be fair, there is much in that of Trump needing to delude himself that New York City is rising in his defense, coming to his aid, defending his freedom to break all the laws. He just can't see them because the police have cordoned them off and put them in far away holding areas, perhaps on a little farm upstate. And in his pathetic version of the Nathan Fielder gag, he is out on the town having the time of his life with a bunch of friends. They're all just out of frame protesting, too. There is little for Justice Juan Merchan to do about this latest threat. And whether or not it's realistic, it's another threat. It's a threat to besiege the courthouse. There's little for Merchan to do about it other than to encourage the city and the state of New York to have tanks ready, because frankly, if Trump terrorist gangs again rise up against this government, as he had them do on January 6th. The only way the point is going to be made clear this time is if it ends with the New York Department of Sanitation having to clean them up with brooms and hoses and garbage trucks. But Mershon can do something about the part of this fish that stinks. Literally, if the flatulence reports from last week are correct. Few experts expect the judge to do this, and I know that the judge did not shut down the first day of defendant J. Trump's Stormy Daniels election interference trial with just a little David Pecker merely to give Trump more time to violate the gag order ahead of today's gag order hearing into how many times Trump could violate the gag order, what with his busy schedule of farting and napping and fart napping. But guess what? It has worked out that way, hasn't it?
When are they going to look at all the lies that Cohen did in the last trial? He got caught lying in the last trial. So he got caught lying, pure lying. And when are they going to look at that?
Ordered that defendant is directed to refrain from the following, making or directing others to make public statements about known or reasonably foreseeable witnesses concerning their potential participation in the investigation or in this criminal proceeding. So that clip, in which he does that against Michael Cohen, is proof of one Trump violation of the Mershon gag order at 12:48 Eastern Dementia Time yesterday. Then there was the second Trump violation yesterday, 3 minutes earlier, 12:45 Eastern Defendant Time yesterday, in which Trump said Michael Cohen was guilty of these charges, not him.
The things he got in trouble for were things that had nothing to do with me. He got in trouble and went to jail. This had nothing to do with me.
So that's two. Plus, in a list of supposed trial facts, a bunch more on his campaign website, including comments about witnesses, quote, testimony of some of the most disreputable and fame-thirsty characters on the planet. That's three violations. There's a Trump quote posted, attributed to the New York Post. I have a Trump-hating judge with a Trump-hating wife and family whose daughter worked for Kamala Harris and now receives money from the Biden-Harris campaign. That quote links to a photo of the judge's daughter. That's four violations of the gag order. Plus the seven that prosecutors submitted last week, and two more after they submitted it last week that occurred on Friday. At least 13 violations of Justice Mershon's gag order just since jury selection began in this trial, and yet lawyers think the worst that Mershon will do is admonish Trump. Now, we can all agree on ranges here and that the extremes are wrong. Death penalty? No. Too much. Admonishments? No. Too little. Trump is not just violating the gag order. He is doing so compulsively. And he is doing so because, as I suggested last Friday, he is viewing this trial as he views every other trial, as he views every other confrontation in his world. Life or death, him or me, them or me, the government or me, America or me. He said as much last Friday. The criticisms of Justice Mershon that you will hear next are not technical. They're not about resolving things. They're not even about the judge recusing from the case. He says the conflict has to end with the judge. It has to end with the judge. These are deliberately chosen phrases. End the judge.
And the conflict has to end with the judge. The judge has a conflict, the worst I've ever seen, and it has to end with the judge. The conflict with the judge, because that's something that he cannot do anything about. It's wrong. It's wrong.
Judge Mershon can do nothing himself about Trump having now escalated this to ending him and to coupling that with demanding that police be moved away from the courthouse at 100 Center Street so that his mobs can end him. But he could, right now, order Trump to jail for violating the gag order. It's not like he just started doing it. It's not like he hasn't been warned. We will reach this point, Trump to jail, sooner rather than later. And the reluctance of any authority figure in this country to cut to the chase and to do it mystifies me. Except when I again quote Jean Renoir in Rules of the Game as he foretells French society collapsing in self-interest even before the Nazis attacked in 1940. You see, in this world, There is one awful thing, and that is that everyone has his reasons. But Mershon can regain control of this trial, and in fact, regain control of the entire legal system's effort to put Trump behind bars where he should be and where he should live out his appalling life without sending Trump to jail now. He can say, you have sworn that you understood that this gag order meant what it means, and yet you have violated it 13 times in the last 9 days, and if you violated a 14th time at any point in the future, I will revoke your bail, and I will put you in Rikers Island, and I will keep you there 1 full week for every violation. You may now return to your seat. We're going to have to grasp this nettle, or grasp this bull by the horns, or maybe most appropriately grasp this bullshit by the diaper. Trump will have to go to jail at some point. He has to be stopped. If you want to try to slow him first, by all means. I don't know what we've been doing the last 3.5 years. Seems to me we've been trying to slow him down. But Juan Merchan and the other judges and the other prosecutors are the ones entitled to, and they are the ones charged with the responsibility to act in defense of the nation. Trump has accelerated this to where we were in the weeks and months before January 6th. He has wanted 2 judges attacked. He has wanted 3 prosecutors attacked. He has made these wants public, and now he wants, and again I am quoting him, courthouses all over the country, unquote, attacked. Trump is already attacking, metaphorically attacking our courthouses, and he has been attacking us for a decade. It is time to stop him now. Parenthetically, the opening day at that trial itself ended early due to religious holidays and due to a juror's dental emergency, and he thinks his teeth hurt now. Just wait. What little transpired, including just perfunctory initial questioning of the perfectly named David Pecker, did have one tangible effect. It made Trump squirm. It has been years, it has been decades, since he has not been surrounded by yes men, since he's had any idea how much he is hated, and more importantly, how much he is in danger. Breaking his carefully built bubble may in fact be all we get out of this, because if you didn't notice, there is a member of the jury who somehow slipped in past prosecution objections and strikes who says he reads everything and he's on Twitter X, but he couldn't cite one news source except for Truth Social. So ultimately, this trial could wind up being hung. And it could wind up being just about making sure Trump spends week upon week hearing this two-word message from America, quote, you suck. For the truncated day one, it was limited to opening statements in which the defense called Trump a person, just like you and just like me, and a family man, even though no member of his many families has been at the trial at all. And the original event that precipitated all this was him banging a porn star, right while wife 3 was still nursing child 5. He's a family man. He hates his family just like you and I do. The prosecution emphasized Trump is on trial for election interference, not hush money. And the American media largely continues to be unable to comprehend the distinction. CNN, still yesterday, last night, I presume this morning, running banners in which they title this Hush Money Trial. Then again, that is a network that on Friday showed a live suicide outside the Trump courtroom and boasted about it, and boasted about its own superior coverage, even though you are not supposed to show live suicides on the air because that might encourage suicide, and also because the viewers at home might be horrified by it. But They did it really well, even though their anchor on the scene first called it an active shooter situation. And then during her breathless and gory play-by-play, faster than somebody calling a horse race, she twice insisted the man who went there to get exactly the kind of coverage CNN gleefully provided for his death had, quote, emblazoned himself. He's emblazoned himself, she said, even though the word emblazon means to put a logo or insignia on something. So I don't know why I'm expecting CNN to understand what's actually going on at the Trump trial. I guess I'm just grateful that CNN did not make a "you're fired" joke. Incredibly, long term anyway, the actual Trump legal headline from yesterday may have not come from New York, but rather Florida, where witness exhibits in the Trump espionage case reveal that the feds have a small coterie of witnesses close to Trump, including an unidentified person 16. Clearly a senior Trump aide, but not necessarily in the innermost circle, who revealed nothing less than the fact that Trump's people told his valet and now co-defendant Walt Nauta not to worry about the stolen documents case, that it was not going anywhere, yet, just in case, even if he were to, say, get charged with lying to the FBI, Trump will pardon him after he regains power. Person 16, the guy who identified this information, was so spooked by what he knows and the prospect of retribution and the sheer number of non-disclosure agreements he had signed that while he fulsomely revealed what he knows, he would not let the FBI record the interview. He also revealed that Trump routinely took documents from the Oval Office to his White House residence, and yes, he had heard Trump declassify one set of them, the ones pertaining to the FBI investigation of Trump's links to Russia. As to the universal standing order to declassify anything Trump ever touched or just looked at or blinked about twice, nope, says person 16. Never happened. The Nauta stuff is critical. If Trump ever goes to trial in Florida, he's meat. Because on top of everything else, they can easily break this Nauta, and then they can get Trump for a little bit of witness tampering. Let's run some of the other headlines. Hey, I got Biden's next campaign ad for him, courtesy of this Jesse Waters ass from Fox. At least I think he's still with Fox. He might not be now. He used to be Bill O'Reilly's henchman. Not as smart as O'Reilly, not nearly. But he may be unemployed once the Fuhrer hears that little Jesse Waters said this about Trump.
The guy needs exercise. He's usually golfing. And so you're going to put a man who's almost 80 sitting in a room like this on his butt for all that time. It's not healthy. You know how big of a health nut I am. He needs sunlight and he needs activity. He needs to be walking around. He needs action. It's really cruel and unusual punishment to make a man do that.
I'm Joe Biden and I approve this message. Also coming in the future. Good evening. I'm Tucker Carlson. This is Tucker Carlson Tonight. Jesse Waters? Jesse Waters who? One point again to emphasize, among people who think they are both too old, it is Biden 61, Trump 13 in the polling. All you have to do is drag up the Trump is too old number. Apparently, it's already worked with Jesse Waters. He may be as dumb as the average Trump Republican. Also, Politico, lost without video to steal and show, has resorted to demonstrating key events of the Trump trial in New York by using bobblehead dolls. I have bad news for Politico on this. I used bobblehead dolls to demonstrate, because we could not get video, we could not put our cameras in the meetings, to demonstrate the activities of the National Football League Players Association and its ownership, its management council, during the NFL player strike of 1982. I don't want to say using bobbleheads when you can't get video is an old bit, but I did it when I was 23 years old, and more importantly, when CNN was 2 years old. Back when we didn't show live suicides. And say, oh, this will win us an Emmy. Bring his ashes with us. Benny Thompson has offered legislation, introduced it in the House. Anybody convicted of a felony with a term of at least 1 year, guess what happens to their Secret Service protection? Oh, they forfeit it. Oh, Benny. It's not going to pass, obviously, although we said that about Ukraine, didn't we? It's not going to pass. And anyway, even if it did pass, somehow I'm sure Trump's Secret Service agents would volunteer to go to prison with him anyway. Late polling from NBC, Trump 46, Biden 44, but Biden 39, Trump 37, Kennedy 13, Stein 3, West 2. In other words, some kind of shift has taken place, and the third parties, or in this case, the third, fourth, and fifth parties, are now taking votes away more from Trump than from Biden, which we saw coming, if you will remember, long before it was evidenced in any of the polling. Trump attacked Kennedy. So expect much more of that. And somebody needs to get a hold of Cornel West and explain to him how badly history will judge him for this. And call Jill Stein in Moscow. The other thing from the NBC News poll that is fascinating, it turns out that only NBC has asked this question in a two-form fashion. What's most important? What's the most important issue? And the same answers keep coming back. Inflation, 23%, cost of living, and then immigration slash the border at 22%. So it's what's the most important issue? Inflation and the cost of living, 23%. Then immigration and the border, 22%. And then they ask the question in a different way. What's the most important issue in determining your vote? 28% said, high number, 28% said protecting democracy or constitutional rights. Immigration and the border, second at 20%. Abortion, third at 19%. So in other words, not asking what do you think generically is the most important issue of the day, but what are you going to base your vote on? 47% said protecting democracy or constitutional rights or abortion rights. That's the key, not who's leading in the polls. Here is, though, a story that would lead the news in any other timeline, in any other moment in American history. The Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez, quote, Matt Gaetz, he paid minors to have sex with them at drunk parties. There's a second version of this quote. He paid minors to have sex with him at drug parties. Oh, well, that's much better. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson will campaign today alongside Congressman Tony Gonzalez. I am beginning to think Mike Johnson, sometime last week, was hit by lightning, but in a good way. Keep him in office. Hell, make him a Democrat. Also of interest here, once upon a time, you could be on one network and talk politics and advocate even for one party on that one network, while on your sixth day of work, you were also on another network talking sports utterly apolitically. And let me tell you from personal experience, that time when you could do that, that ended in the year 2010. And it especially ended at a place called ESPN. And I know because I helped write the rules saying you could not do politics in one place while you were on ESPN in the other place. So why is ESPN now letting its most prominent on-air personality openly campaign for Trump? This will end in tears for everybody. Why ESPN has two choices: silence Stephen A. Smith or fire Stephen A. Smith. That's next. This is Countdown.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's T-E-R-M-I-N-I-X.com to book online today.
This is Countdown with Keith Olbermann.
Of us on this all-new edition of Countdown. So somebody asked me the other day if I knew a sports casting agent named Lou Oppenheim. And it was like the old joke about the guy saying Niagara Falls. And the second guy turns around and loses his mind. Niagara Falls, slowly I turn, step by step. Not that Lou Oppenheim was the worst party of the story in which his business partner was supposedly negotiating a new deal for me at my employer's at CBS in 1991, while he was also sending CBS tapes of other clients in hopes of getting them my job that he was still negotiating for. But Lou was part of it. You gotta hear this story. It involves me also getting served with court papers the night of my first ever SportsCenter. Next on Things I Promised Not to Tell. First, still more new idiots to talk about. The daily roundup of the miscreants, morons, and Dunning-Kruger effect specimens, including two sports guys who have not succeeded in transforming into news guys, who constitute today's worst persons in the world. War crankite, CBS News. The bronze, worse, Nate Silver, who started in sports metrics and moved into political metrics in large part because I put him on TV talking about political metrics. Oops! Just say oops and get out. I really thought he would be satisfied as the master of the numbers, but I guess no one is satisfied as the master of the numbers. On January 3rd, 2022, Nate Silver tweeted, quote, "It's probably foolish to think a New York City mayor will successfully translate into being a national political figure, but I still think Eric Adams would be in my top five for who will be the next Democratic presidential nominee after Joe Biden." My man, you left off a couple of zeros after that five. Your top 500, your top 5,000. New polling from the Manhattan Institute. Who you vote for in the next New York City mayor's election? Mayor Eric Adams, 16%! 16% said yes to Eric Adams. Somebody else, 65%. Ah! Heard that phrase, eye-watering numbers? Well, here they are. I can't see the page. 65. Somebody else. Anybody else. For God's sakes, one of the horses in Central Park. I don't care. A manhole cover. Whatever. Maybe a Republican. Not sure. So it still could be somebody other than Adams, 19% more. So right now it's Adams 16, not Adams 84. Wait, it gets worse. How far underwater are his favorable, unfavorable impression numbers? His favorable minus his unfavorable. With Democrats, he's at minus 35. And that is his best party demographic. Among New Yorkers in their 30s, he's minus 74. 18 to 29-year-olds, minus 68. 40 to 49-year-olds, minus 68. Among black voters, minus 11. People more than 206 years old, minus 22. How's that possible? Well, I made that one up. And it all may be worse than that because those are just disapprove or approve. The percentage that strongly disapproves of Eric Adams is 46%. The percentage that strongly approves of Eric Adams, great job, Mayor, great job, 4%. Four. Good call, Nate Silver. The runner-up, worse, Kevin McCarthy, especially in the context of Mike Johnson, likely to be ex-Speaker, or at least ex-Republican, because he actually stood up for something on principle at last. We can fully see what a human jellyfish Kevin McCarthy is. Goes on Fox, calls the Democrats the dangers to American democracy, and his evidence, quote, I mean, has Hillary Clinton ever said she lost the 2016 election? The surprised host says, yeah, she called Trump and conceded. McCarthy makes a dismissive sound like, and says, but she never said it to the press. She called Trump the night of his election. She made the public concession speech the next day, November 9th, 2016. It was in all of the papers, Kevin McCarthy. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot you don't know how to freaking read. But our winners, the worst, Stephen A. Smith and ESPN. We had a hard and fast rule there. You're on ESPN, no party politics, no endorsements of candidates, no electioneering. You know who wrote that rule? I wrote that rule. You know why? Because I actually believe in the separation of politics and sportscasting, not politics and sports. If athletes are going to go political, you can cover them doing it. You kind of have to sometimes, but don't you do it. Aaron Rodgers gets strung out on something and starts spewing conspiracy theories on ESPN. No, you probably should not have given him that platform to do it, but regardless, you then have to cover it. You have to explain he's gone nuts. But sportscasters, campaigning, not reporting on Colin Kaepernick, not recording and reporting on transgender athletes, but reporting and making a choice of Biden or Trump. Nobody wants that mix. Least of all, the ESPN talent who would do it, they don't really want it. The ESPN management who would permit it, they don't want it. And yet they are letting Stephen A. Smith, who makes millions of dollars as the man in television most gifted in saying the least amount of stuff, taking up the most amount of time, who kills off hours a day between ESPN gambling advice without ever advancing a story or explaining a team dynamic or improving anybody's knowledge about anything in sports, who thus deserves every penny he makes, they are letting him go on Fox News and campaign for Donald Trump. Campaign on Sean Hannity's show. On with Sean Hannity, one of the people who has most damaged the United States of America. Could not have done more damage if he were Vladimir Putin. Stephen A. Smith goes on with Hannity and tells him about Trump, quote, black folks find him relatable because of when he said what he is going through is similar to what black Americans have gone through. He wasn't lying. Spoiler alert, Stephen A. Trump is lying. He's always lying. Quote, he was telling the truth. When you see the law enforcement, the court system, and everything else being exercised against him, it is something that black folks throughout this nation can relate to with some of our historic, iconic figures. Stephen, you just insulted all of your historic, iconic figures. And all of mine, and all of America's. And you're a useful idiot. The law is being exercised against Trump, whatever the F that means. It's being exercised against him because he keeps breaking the law. He has broken the law to try and stall a dictatorship in this country. One, I might add, that if he succeeds in the fall, will repress minority groups and the media way more than everybody else. You and me are going to the camps under dictator Trump, Stephen. and it got worse. Quote, we've seen that happen throughout society, so no matter what race, what ethnicity you may emanate from, we relate to you when you're suffering like that because we know we have. ESPN, in the last decade, has reprimanded, suspended, demoted, and dismissed on-air people who said far less propagandistic things, who didn't do 1% of the damage Stephen A. Smith just did to ESPN, who hit far fewer political party talking points, and who didn't come anywhere as close to what Stephen A. Smith just did there. Go on national television on a propaganda network from hell like Fox and come up with excuses for a criminal like Donald Trump and his crimes and figuratively hug Donald Trump and Sean Hannity. F you, Stephen A. Smith. Bluntly, I have been associated with ESPN longer than anybody now running it, or Smith. I also think my credentials on trying to balance sports and politics are better than anybody in the business, including management and Stephen A. Smith. This is not 2008. I just barely got away with it in 2008. By 2010, the National Football League said I couldn't do it anymore. They forced me off NBC's Football Night in America. To the executives at ESPN letting Smith do this, you are going to inherit the wind. Bob Iger, I have known you since 1979. They will fire you over this someday. Just because many of you agree with him and want to suck up to Trump just in case does not mean your predecessors were wrong. Embrace party politics as opposed to cultural issues or sports issues with political impact. Embrace Trump versus Biden, and I'd say this if you were embracing Biden, and ESPN will die. And Stephen, you and I have always gotten along well personally, so I'm saying this in hopes you will take it this way. Drop the politics. Do it now. You cannot be on ESPN and do Trump commercials simultaneously. Do it or kiss your sports career goodbye, and more importantly, all that money you have to go to the bank to count every once in a while, you can kiss that goodbye too. It doesn't work anymore. If it worked anymore, I'd still be at ESPN doing it. Stephen A. Smith, campaigning for Trump, and ESPN, letting him campaign for Trump. Today's worst persons in the world.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This episode is brought to you by Terminix. Terminix can't help you run for office or take on the country's biggest problems, but they can help you solve one of the peskiest problems at home, pests. You know, the ants in your kitchen, the roaches under your sink, even the termites in the walls. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. No matter what type of pest it is, they can Terminix it fast with personalized pest care that puts you in control. Their expertly trained technicians may not know intricate political strategy, but they know their local pest pressures. And with customized plans tailored to your specific situation, you get everything you need to not just get pests out, but keep them out for good. Between their speedy service, caring technicians, and over 95 years of experience, it's no mystery why they're trusted by homes and businesses everywhere. So if you have a pest problem, don't stress it, Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com to book online today. Number one story on the countdown, and my favorite topic, me and things I promised not to tell. And somebody invoked his name the other day, asked me about a television agent named Lou Oppenheim. I only met, I think, Lou Oppenheim once. It was not a particularly memorable meeting, but Lou Oppenheim is in the middle of one of the great stories of my career, at least in terms of agents who have represented me. I had one agent for pretty much all of the 1983 to 2010 era of my broadcasting career, and I've had several of them since then. But in the middle of 1991, my then colleague Jim Lampley at KCBS in Los Angeles said, "I don't think your agent is big time enough to advance you further in your career." Well, Lampley had worked for years at ABC Television. He was at the network, and I, at the age of 32 and doing pretty well at KCBS in Los Angeles, certainly financially and in the ratings compared to the ratings that the rest of the station had, but not doing well in terms of establishing any kind of national presence in sportscasting, I wanted to do as well nationally as Lampley had. So Lampley said I should fire my agent and hire this guy, Arthur Kaminsky. He was the head of a company called Athletes and Artists, or as I later referred to them, Athletes and Con Artists. I'll explain to you right now that it turned out, I found out the following year, that Art Kaminsky had sought me as a client not because he wanted to represent me, not because Lampley had suggested it, but because Art Kaminsky was, like me, a sports memorabilia collector, and he assumed I could get him a good price on a set of 1955 Topps football cards. The high end of this set of 1955 Topps football cards in the year 1991 was maybe $2,000. He thought I could get it for him for about $1,500. That's why he wanted to represent me, and that was apparently the only reason he wanted to represent me. Needless to say, this did not go well, and this is how not well it went. Although they were paying me $500,000 when I was 32 years old, and particularly in 1991, that went a long way, I was not particularly happy at KCBS, Channel 2 in Los Angeles, because the station was a graveyard. It had been in last place in the ratings since about 1975 or so, and would be well into the late 90s, if I remember correctly. They had hundreds, perhaps, of broadcasters, all of whom succeeded elsewhere, who did not succeed there. If you remember the morning newsreader on the Today Show, Ann Curry, she was with me at KCBS. All kinds of anchors, Jim Forbes behind the music. Jim Forbes was a reporter for us. The guy from whichever one of those tabloid shows, Harvey Levin, he was one of our reporters. It was a great staff and lousy management. I wanted to get out of there anyway, but there didn't seem to be the right job anywhere. I wanted to work in my hometown of New York, and I thought Kaminsky could help me there. Or, at least, I wanted Kaminsky to talk the management of Channel 2 in L.A. into picking up my option for the rest of my contract. I'd been there for 3 years and about 3 months, and I had 2 years to go, and it was their option, and it was another $500,000 a year. And even then I realized that being paid $500,000 a year to do like 3 sportscasts a day and maybe an hour over the weekend was pretty damn good money for not a lot of work. So Kaminsky's job became to try to get me a job in New York or to get me my job in L.A., to get them to pick up the option. I'll spare you what he did and did not do in terms of getting me the job in New York. Ultimately, I suggested something to him, and he said, "I would never do that. It would reflect badly on me." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" I had volunteered to work at union scale in a new job in New York for a period of time, and if the station didn't like me, they could get rid of me, or they could pay me competitively. That would be just beneath my dignity. So as the months went on, it became evident that there really were only three possibilities for my employment for the year 1992. The possibility of a job in San Diego, which would have cost almost as much as Los Angeles in terms of cost of living and paid about one third, something like that. Or staying at Channel 2 in Los Angeles, or going to ESPN, which I didn't really want to do because I was living in Beverly Hills and there was no humidity and no winter. And guess what? ESPN was not anywhere near Beverly Hills. And it didn't pay that well. It only paid about 35 or 40% of what the job in Los Angeles paid. In any event, so now Kaminsky worked on getting me to retain my job somehow, some redirection or promise, or to make the shows more appealing to 80-year-old women who watch Channel 2 in Los Angeles at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then our newscast at 5, or whatever it is they had in mind. One day, he told me that his partner at Athletes and Con Artists, a man named Lou Oppenheim, was going to be in Los Angeles when he normally was in New York and was going to meet with the general manager and the news director of KCBS to find out and to convince them about my option, that he would come out of that meeting and be able to tell me whether or not I was going to stay there and not have to sell my condo and take a significant salary loss and possibly not have to move to Bristol, Connecticut. The day came. I saw Oppenheim on the way in. I greeted him at the door. I walked him down the hallway, and I said, make sure you stop by before you leave. And as the hours went on, I saw the general manager of the television station in the hallway somewhere, meaning the meeting had been concluded. And then, as I was walking to my office, there I saw in the distance, coming down the hallway, who else but Lou Oppenheim. And I said, Lou, what happened? And he began to run towards me and past me. I can't talk right now. I'm late for the airport. I said, What do you mean? I just need to know. Give me a head start on putting my house up on the market. Am I staying or going? I can't go. I can't talk to you now. I have to go back to the airport. And he was gone. He had the answer. He had been told by the general manager whether my contract option was going to be picked up or not. And he wouldn't tell me. Now, I later found out that he wouldn't tell me because this was on the instructions of his partner, Kaminsky. Kaminsky is now dead, so he can't really defend himself in this story. But when he was alive, he couldn't defend himself either because he was a schmuck. What Art Kaminsky was doing was keeping this information to himself, namely that my option was not being picked up at KCBS in Los Angeles, and thus there was a number one sportscasting job open in Los Angeles, and he saw this now as one thing and one thing only, not representing me and my next job, or letting me know about what was now going to be my soon-to-be ex-job. He saw this as an opportunity for him, Art Kaminsky, to put another one of his clients in my job while I still had it, and he was still arguing, theoretically, for me to stay there. And we're talking about, I believe, maybe September or October of 1991, and I still had a contract through January 1st of 1992. I was going to be a lame duck and did not even know it. One day, during the baseball playoffs, which were on CBS at the time, I was in the news director's office. It was given to us as the viewing room for the pre- and post-game shows that we were producing for Channel 2 in Los Angeles for the baseball playoffs and the World Series. Unlike most sporting events, in Los Angeles, the problem with TV broadcasts of the NFL or Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, anything at all, the games don't end too late in Los Angeles and the rest of the West Coast. They end too early. A World Series game that does not shut down till 11:30 or midnight Eastern time is over at 9 o'clock. That's 2 hours to kill until you can go to the 11 o'clock news. So we would fill it with a post-game show, a locally produced post-game show with me and a then-active baseball player. We had Wally Joyner from the California Angels, my longtime friend. He did it 1 year. Danny Tartable, who had been with the Kansas City Royals and the Seattle Mariners. We had Rick Dempsey, who was then with the Los Angeles Dodgers. We had all kinds of people, and we did this for all sports. We did this for the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball. And one day, as we're sitting there watching the baseball playoff games in the news director's office with the biggest TV we could find to watch this, my partner, my analyst for the postgame shows, was a guy who was pitching for the St. Louis Cardinals and had aspirations to become a broadcaster and became one, named Joe McGrain. And Joe McGrain suddenly began to look around the news director's office, and I saw his head tilt over at about 90 degrees, which is a very unusual position to see another human being keep his head in. And Joe and I had gotten along pretty well at that point. We didn't know each other that well, but we were friends for a very long time thereafter. And Joe was now looking at a series of tapes. This is during the commercials, between innings of the World Series game. And he's looking at the tapes, the boxes of tapes on the news director's desk, and he's looking at them sideways because they're labeled vertically rather than horizontally. And he says, "Huh, Hannah Storm." And I said, "Hannah Storm? There's a tape of Hannah Storm on my news director's desk?" He said, "Yeah, what do you know about her?" And I said, "She's one of Art Kaminsky's other clients." And he said, "Well, over here, there's, what's this, Jimmy Cephalo." And I said, "Jimmy Cephalo is another one of Art Kaminsky's clients." Well, this went on for quite a while. It turned out there were about a dozen tapes on the news director's desk of other Art Kaminsky clients for my job while I was represented by Art Kaminsky. And his partner, Lou Oppenheim, had literally pushed me aside so he did not have to tell me that my contract was not being renewed. Needless to say, even though Mr. Kaminsky had been negotiating my job with ESPN, my next job with ESPN, I shortly thereafter fired him, but not before I called him up and screamed at him, which was the least he deserved from me. Other people have had exceptional experiences with Art Kaminsky and made a lot of money thanks to his involvement. I was not one of those people. In any event, at some point, Kaminsky said he didn't want to talk to me anymore, and the discussion of what was going to happen to me at KCBS should be handled by the third sports agent in his stable of agents, Alan Sanders. This is 1991. In 1983, 8 years previously, Alan Sanders had been my intern at CNN Sports in New York. He had just gone into the agenting game, and he had, in fact, a few weeks previously actually driven me up from my folks' house outside of New York City up to ESPN in Bristol, Connecticut, the first time I'd ever been there, to have an interview and look around. And he drove me back, and he was a great guy, and I always got along well with Alan, and we have crossed paths several times since then, and I had nothing at all bad to say about Alan Sanders. On the other hand, I did point out that this was really kind of rubbing it in, that Kaminsky here not only did not permit his partner, Lou Oppenheim, to tell me the truth in real time and actually avoid me and push me out of the way. Don't push me out of the way. Just say yes or no or thumbs up or thumbs down. I gotta go. But then on top of that, Kaminsky would not talk to me about this subject. He said Alan would. And I said, "I don't think that's appropriate, Arthur. I think you should do it." Whereupon Arthur Kaminsky turned around and, holding the phone away from his own mouth, shouted, "Hey, Alan, Olbermann doesn't think you're important enough to tell him he's been fired by CBS. So when I then finalized my deal to go to ESPN, and you know what happened there for the year 1992, I called up several people there who were the ones who hired me. And I said, "Listen, I'm no longer represented by Art Kaminsky. I'm represented again by Jean Sage," who was the woman who had represented me before I made the mistake of dismissing her and hiring Arthur Kaminsky. And these people said, "Oh, thank God. Here, I know we told you we couldn't pay you more than whatever it was, $190,000. I know we told you that, but here's another $20,000 just because we're all so grateful that we don't have to deal with that Dick Kaminsky." And I actually said, "No, his name is Arthur." So I was a little honked off about Kaminsky, and I figured that if anybody ever heard this story, his stature as a business agent in hockey, which was his other thing, or broadcasting, would be diminished somewhat. And so I figured we'd just let this go, and Gene Sage would be my agent at ESPN, and I, by the way, was not going to pay Arthur Kaminsky a dime of my ESPN contract. Sure enough, I go to work at SportsCenter and, in fact, start earlier than planned. I was supposed to take 3 months off and go to Hawaii. In fact, they needed me to go back there and launch the radio network early at ESPN. And so I did not get my time off, and I moved there earlier than planned, and I started on SportsCenter maybe a week earlier than originally planned, which was about the opening day of the 2000, or rather the 1992, it's a long time ago, baseball season. So I started a little early, and as I'm sitting there writing my first script and going, well, it's not the first place I'd choose to live, but as Lampley himself once said, look at it this way, you will be married to your audience. There's very little you can do to screw it up. I thought it was an interesting analogy, but anyway, we'll let that one pass. As I was doing that, there was a call from the front desk saying that there was somebody downstairs to see me. Well, I was naive enough to go downstairs to see who it was. And a man I'd never met stood there at the main desk at ESPN and said, are you Keith Olbermann? And I said, yes. And he said, you've been served. And he handed me a lawsuit from Arthur Kaminsky seeking the something like $10,000 that I would have owed him if he had actually been my agent at ESPN. That was Lou Oppenheim's partner. I am led to believe Lou was forced to do everything he did. Nevertheless, I did just want to put this one on the record because as I told the story to the person who asked about Lou Oppenheim, they went into hysterics at every little stage of this story. So there it is, the Lou Oppenheim, I can't tell you the truth because my boss, Arthur Kaminsky, told me not to, story. If you're looking for an agent in the field of sports broadcasting, I can only give you this advice. I have no advice whatsoever. I've done all the damage I can do here. Thank you for listening. Countdown musical directors Brian Ray and John Philip Chanel arranged, produced, and performed most of our music. Mr. Ray was on guitars, bass, and drums. Mr. Chanel handled orchestration and keyboards. It was produced by TKO Brothers. Other music, including some of the Beethoven compositions, were arranged and performed by the group No Horns Allowed. Suddenly I became Scandinavian. Performed. The sports music is the Olbermann theme from ESPN 2, written by Mitch Warren Davis, courtesy of ESPN Inc. Our satirical and pithy musical comments are by Nancy Faust, the best baseball stadium organist ever. Our announcer today was my friend Larry David, and everything else was pretty much my fault. So that's Countdown for this, the 197th day until the 2024 presidential election, and the 1,204th day since Diaper J. Trump's first attempted coup against the democratically elected government of the United States. Use the 14th Amendment and the not regularly given electoral objection option. Use the Insurrection Act. Use the justice system. Use the mental health system. Use the recyclable diaper system to stop him from doing it again while we still can. The next scheduled countdown is tomorrow. Bulletins as the news warrants. Till then, I'm Keith Olbermann. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and good luck. Countdown with Keith Olbermann is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax, Terminix can help. Because when pests show up, so does Terminix. With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast. if your home or business has pests. Don't stress it. Terminix it. Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today. That's TERMINIX.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.